What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prof G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prof G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prof G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the PODcast, the Pride of Detroit podcast, here live on Twitch, live on YouTube, coming to you from whatever podcasting feed you enjoy. We're available everywhere. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am back from Orlando. The owners' meetings barely made it back, but back ready to talk about that. By the way, you can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. With me to help break down some of the things we learned at the owners' meetings, talk a little bit the news and league news, new rules. We're going to go Bill Maher style, new rules, except we're not going to be as obnoxious and pompous. I'll just say obnoxious, maybe a little pompous. I tend to get a little pompous about the rules. I'm not going to lie. Anyways, here to talk to me, here to break that down, is the senior editor of Pride of Detroit, is at Ryan_POD on Twitter. Ryan Matthews is here. How we doing, buddy?
Doing great, man. Did you go check out Disney World or what?
No, I drove through it because that's where Google Maps told me to drive through. Because when you live in Orlando, sometimes you just drive through Disney World, I guess.
Wow, I took a shortcut right through Magic Kingdom, huh?
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Well, you know what? A little bit of magic at the owners' meetings.
Yeah. I'll say this. The owners' meetings might be my favorite off-season event.
So it's like the opposite of the Senior Bowl.
Yes. It's an enlightening event. It's fun. It's normally somewhere sunny, which is nice. This was only my second one, but it's very enjoyable because you essentially get at least three media sessions, and they're all like 30 minutes long. So you get to sit down with Rod Wood for 30 minutes and pepper him with questions about pretty much anything. You get to sit down and sort of kind of have breakfast with Matt. Oh my gosh, Dan Campbell. Listen, I'm sleep deprived. I came in at 3 a.m. last night. And speak with him for 30 minutes. And then you get to sit down with Brad Holmes for a full 30 minutes. And it's a tighter group of Detroit media. They tend to ask better questions, and you don't have those people that come in and ask, you know, softballs and ask for the millionth time questions that have been answered. And so it's super informative. You also get to do that swanky party thing that I mentioned in the last podcast, which is also a cool way where you can just like talk off the record with a bunch of stuff. And so that's kind of where I want to start. I want to talk about everything that we learned in all those media sessions because they're always super informative. And I guess we have to start with Cam Sutton just so that, I mean, I guess we're not quite closing the book on it, but there was certainly an unexpected development, and it actually didn't even happen when we talked with Rod Wood. It happened after that when Dan Miller had a one-on-one with him right afterwards, and Rod Wood drops a relative bombshell that when Cam Sutton's arrest warrant went public via social media, he was inside the Lions facility, just working out, doing an off-season workout. It's an odd twist, but in a way, it almost felt a little relieving because we didn't know where he was at all. We didn't know about his overall well-being. And it's good to know that at least one point, like, he was at least doing okay enough to be going about his business, which is also a very strange thing to be doing given his situation.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, right? Where it's like, okay, right, I'm glad that the guy's okay, but also like, hopefully he's taking the team's advice and going to eventually turn himself in because, you and Chris covered it on your last podcast talking about just Cam Sutton's overall situation, but it's like, it's bigger than football at this point, right? I would venture to guess that Cam Sutton's professional football career might be over. That's nothing more than speculation, but considering the severity of the accusations and how things are playing out currently in Detroit, and Cam Sutton's age, I think there's a lot of things that kind of just point in the direction of let's worry less about Cam Sutton's professional football career and more so about the, you know, the legalities and the realness of the situation that's going on beyond the facility at Allen Park, where he was when, like you said, the Lions learned about his arrest warrant and all of that stuff that entails. But I think, Jeremy, the thing about Cam Sutton, right, is moving on from that situation. And I know the Lions aren't necessarily moving on. There's a lot of things that are probably going to drag out for like longer than a calendar year, right?
Sure.
The question then becomes replacing Cam Sutton,
right,
for the 2024 Detroit Lions. And speaking of a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, we got a little bit of some different answers from the people in charge when it comes to the cornerback room.
Yeah, it was pretty odd because obviously Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes have been, you know, aligned in just about everything they've done. And that doesn't mean they never disagree. I'm sure that happens. But publicly speaking, it seems like they're always lock and step. And we have breakfast with Dan Campbell and he's asked about cornerback. He's like, oh, yeah, like that's still a need. That's still something we're pursuing. You know, we might even sign a guy before the draft, blah, blah, blah. You're like, OK, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you lost a potential starter that you probably weren't expecting to lose. You're still in the market. Great. That makes sense. And then you go to Brad Holmes, who's like, we did everything in free agency. We fixed everything. We're great. Quarterback, nah, we got Amik Robertson and we got Carlton Davis. We're good there. And it's just like, okay. Like, I like the confidence. And in a way, like, he's right, because the one thing that they both did say is, like, they did not expect to get both Amik Robertson and Carlton Davis. That was something where it felt like an either-or situation. They thought when they got Carlton Davis that Amik was going to be like, no, thanks. I came here to be a starter and there's clearly not a starting job available for me. And instead, to Amik's credit, he's like, sign me up. I'm ready to go. I'll compete my way onto this roster like I did in Vegas. And basically Brad said the same thing, is they did not expect to get both those guys. So I think you can fairly say that how they approached free agency and how they were able to get those two guys soften the blow. But do you fall on one side or the other? Are you like, no, you got to get a corner? Or are you like, listen, they have three guys that can compete for a starting job. Three guys that are probably capable of starting if healthy. That's not a luxury that a lot of teams have. So maybe that is enough and they don't have to get another corner. They don't have to draft a corner early.
I think one thing, right, is that it's probably a healthy thing to have Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes disagreeing, not specifically to the situation, right? But like, it's healthy to have a little bit of like, you know, back and forth between two guys, right? But I think specific to this situation, there's a little bit of Brad Holmes like, oh, free agency was an A+. I knocked it out of the park. The only thing I need to do is take care of Josh Reynolds, which we'll get to in a minute, right?
Yeah.
But I think from Dan's perspective is like, well, there's a lot of work to do. And I don't really know how the cornerback room is necessarily going to shake out when it comes to the depth chart. With Brad Holmes, there's probably a little bit of like, dude, I've done a ton. You know what right, I mean? Like, right. look at all the legwork that I've done. The Carlton Davis trade and Amik Robertson signing. You know, even if it is just getting Emmanuel Mosley back in the door, it's like, oh, I'm doing a lot of work here. And Dan's like, well, we still got a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's how I kind of read this situation. I don't necessarily see it as like them not seeing eye to eye. And I don't think that you're suggesting that either, but I Correct. Think that there's a little bit of like, Brad's like, dude, I've done a ton of work. And Dan's like, no, there's still a lot of work to do. I think that they would both agree on that. Right.
Yeah.
I think that there's less room for a veteran corner on this roster right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like signing Robertson, making the deal for Carlton Davis, even with Cam Sutton on his way out, I still think that there's enough on this roster going into the draft that let's see where the chips fall in the draft, right? Let's see how high of a priority it is or just how the board falls. And maybe the Lions luck into a guy at 29 that they really like, or maybe even they move up a little bit, or maybe they wait for day two and they get a guy, you know, early day two that feels like, okay, this guy can push the top of the depth chart. Then you kind of see where the chips fall and maybe another veteran corner to make sense for this roster in terms of the training camp and in terms of fleshing out that entire position, because you don't know where Emmanuel is necessarily in his rehab and you don't know how early you could potentially count on him returning to the fold. So it seems silly, right? But there's a, I think with me, there's, you got to wait and see how the draft plays out now. And at first it was, well, you got to see how free agency plays out before you start talking about the draft. And now it's like, well, you got to wait to see how the draft kind of plays out before you kind of move forward with how you view this cornerback room, Jeremy, as a quote unquote work in progress or the job's done.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really smart observation too, because I think people think that free agency, once the draft hits, free agency is completely over. And that's not really necessarily how it works. A lot of times you will kind of patchwork your holes, your weak spots with free agency. I mean, the Teddy Bridgewater signing happened after free agency. I believe the Bugs initial signing, Isaiah Bugs, was signed after the draft, I believe. So those things will happen. And especially like if you're one of those people that like, give me Stephon Gilmore. He's the kind of veteran that it would not surprise me if he doesn't sign until training camp. And so, yeah, if the Lions don't go corner in the draft, they don't, the right guy isn't there, they could very well plug a hole with someone after the draft. And looking at the roster, like they lost Kendall Vildor, they lost Will Harris, they lost Jerry Jacobs, you lose Cam Sutton, you lose Chase Lucas. Like that's five guys. They haven't replaced all that. There needs to be at least depth. So even if they don't get a starting capable guy, they need special teamers. They need guys that'll fill out the roster. They need bodies for training camp. So they will add to the cornerback position. They might draft one highly. I don't have a feeling one way or another, but again, I'm not approaching the draft, at least in my mind, of what the Lions are going to do. They have to fill this. They have to get this player. They have to get this. They could fall in love with the player, but I don't think they're going to go into the draft thinking we need a corner. We need an edge. We need a wide receiver. That's just, I mean, Brad Holmes can only say it so many times. They're going best player available. And so if the corner that they like isn't there, they're not going to draft a corner. Simple as that.
Yep. And that's the luxury of drafting well, right? Yeah. And that's the luxury of having your roster in the position that it's in, that you can kind of take that approach. But I mean, let's talk about that approach, right? Like part of it was free agency. And like we said, Brad Holmes saying this free agency, he checked all the boxes, sans Josh Reynolds. But how do you feel about those comments? Like we haven't heard Brad Holmes this confident about a free agency.
Yeah.
And specifically a guy who talks a lot about, you know, you don't win football games in March.
Right.
You don't win football games this early in the process.
Who cares if you win headlines this early? And he's out there making headlines of his own saying, we were perfect, by the way.
Right.
Every single plan A.
So what I guess, like from being at the owners meetings, what is kind of the tone and the tenor of those comments and where do those carry weight for you?
Because this team has been so transparent through it all, I think those words carry weight. I don't think that is just Brad Holmes, like, I don't know, trying to sell tickets, right? I think he truly believes and is being quite honest that, hey, this is what we planned to do, and this is what we did, and we got it, and everything worked. And listen, if he wasn't being honest, why would he even mention Josh Reynolds?
Yeah.
Because like,
great point. Yeah.
He struck out on that one. Like he didn't, as I put on Twitter, like
baseball
that,
analogies. There we go.
He lost his perfect game after calling it out. And so, you know, and listen, everything made sense, right? I don't think there was a move out there that the Lions made where you're like, that's weird. I don't get that. Like Carlton Davis, I want to talk a lot about him because I came away with a lot of very positive takeaways of Carlton Davis. Makes a lot of sense. Amik Robertson is a perfect fit in terms of character, in terms of kind of play that he has. DJ Reader, like how can anyone look at that pick and not think, wow, you are getting a veteran leader who is going to continue to make sure this team has a good run defense. And on top of that, provide some splash in pass rush. And then, yeah, I mean, what else? Like Zeitler makes 1,000,000%. He was one of the guys that I predicted them to actually get. And they got him. Like all of it
Marcus Davenport makes a ton of sense.
Yes. And so listen, the criticisms you can make about Brad Holmes' free agencies are the ones you can always make about him, which is, again, a little bit of over-reliance on injured players. But we had a long discussion with Holmes about that, too. And he's just like, listen, this is football. Just because a player, I mean, I'm very loosely paraphrasing him, but I think his overall point was players are going to get injured. We can't really predict who. Yes, these guys are coming off injuries, but other guys are going to get injured. These guys might get injured. Like, there's not really a way. To me, it seemed like a rejection of injury proneness. And that's something I've actually pushed against, too. I think in general, some of that stuff tends to be overblown. Now, if it's, you know, your same knee that's getting blown out year after year after year, that's different. But that's not really the case with any of these guys. You know, DJ Reader has had the same injury, but on different knees. Same with Emmanuel Mosley, right? Same injury, different legs. So I take Brad Holmes at his word that he really does think he knocked it out of the park. And I kind of think he did, too. There's still some holes to fill and some depth to be had. The Lions definitely need a safety. They definitely need, I would say, at least two reserve offensive linemen. But in terms of like hitting their major needs, which was always the primary goal, the Lions did it. And they did it with guys that make a ton of sense. And whether they work or not, we'll see. Sometimes it's injury proneness. Sometimes, you know, maybe Reader is hitting an age in which he's going to have some backslide to his career. But on paper, everything the Lions did made so much sense to me that, yeah, of course I'm going to believe him at his word when he's like, these were all of our plan A's and we hit them all.
Yeah. And I'm really not trying to drink the Kool-Aid so much, but you get Robertson at like a lot of these players that Holmes targets. He's getting them at the right juncture of their career, right? Amik Robertson is on that upward trajectory. You have an opportunity for him to play his way into a bigger role. Maybe that's why Robertson, the player, kind of viewed this as like a perfect marriage, right? Like, there's opportunity for me to take my career to the next level. With Marcus Davenport injured. But I think the one thing that we can all agree on is that maybe Holmes will probably shy away from guys with Achilles injuries, because yeah. I think he's been burned enough on that front.
Sure.
But, and again, that's just such a unique injury that the way that it saps your athleticism is just wild. But even with a guy like Marcus Davenport, there's enough to go off there where, again, you're getting the guy at the right juncture of his career where he did sign that prove it deal in Minnesota. It didn't work out. But there's still clearly a lot of juice left in the tank,
right?
It's worth another swing. And if Holmes misses, what's going to be the worst thing that comes out of it? Because we've seen what this team is capable of doing on defense. And I know it's not the best indication, right? We understand that this team is going to win football games with their offense, with their ability to dictate tempo and flow and control a game on offense. On defense, we saw this team a half away from the Super Bowl with the defense they have, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, what's going to be the drop-off in play from Cam Sutton to Carlton Davis? Hopefully there is no drop-off, right? Like,
right.
We saw that the way that Cam Sutton played down the stretch. Kendall Vildor, right? Like, I think, again, the floor is being elevated. Yeah. And the floor is being elevated in a way that Holmes can take these swings in free agency, and if they hit, holy crap, this defense could look way better than it did last year. If it doesn't, there's still a draft to be had. There's still that, you know, end phase of free agency where, like you said, if Stephon Gilmore is a guy that they want to bring in, it's very much going to be like the Teddy Bridgewater situation, right? You have quarterbacks who are waiting to see, hey, our team's taking a guy in the draft where you're not necessarily going to be the number two guy.
Yeah.
I think a guy like Gilmore wants to see, like, hey, what is that room going to look like? If you take a guy at 29, there's not a lot of room for a guy like Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
If you don't take a guy until day three, there might be some room for Stephon Gilmore there, right? So, I don't want to drink too much of the Kool-Aid, but I do think that Brad Holmes has done a very tactful job of addressing free agency in a way that makes sense for this roster. And I'm very happy with it. Like, I think that he has every right to kind of beat his chest and be like, and I think it's a little bit less outward and showy. I think it's more, again, to what you said, the transparency of it, yeah. Right? Like, why would he come out and say, hey, I checked all my boxes in free agency, minus Josh Reynolds. We're still trying to work that out, right? Why would he come out and say all those things if he didn't truly mean it?
Right. The last thing I want to say about his free agency, and this is kind of something that's been rattling around my head for a while, is that I think Brad Holmes has become kind of an expert at buy low, sell high. Because mm-hmm. The kind of guys that he's targeting are guys that are you know, potentially good, but like, it's like the dented can section, right? 50% off of DJ Reader because he's coming off an injury. You know, you're getting Carlton Davis just before you're going to have to pay him. So you might not have to spend a ton of draft resources, you know, a third, and you're getting a couple draft picks back. And he comes with some injury questions. Marcus Davenport, the Vikings bought high. They had to pay him $14 million. The Lions only had to pay him what? I don't remember what it is.
Six and a half.
Right. And then you sell high. You're like, oh, okay, Josh Reynolds, you want 2 years, $12 million? That's, we paid 2 for 6 last time we signed you.
Yep.
Jonah Jackson, you're on a rookie deal. Great. Can't afford you now. And I mean, you look in the past and it's all been like that, right? They haven't taken a ton of, I mean, really Cam Sutton is the only buy high situation. A guy who was kind of coming up on his career. Even like Amika Robertson might be a little bit of a buy high situation, but in general, like it's still a relative, like he's only trying to hit doubles here. And maybe the ball slips behind. We're doing a lot of baseball analogies because it must be on the mind. Maybe it slips between the outfielder's legs and you turn it into a triple.
Yeah. Maybe it's an inside the park home run.
Yeah.
You know, right. But I think even in that situation, right, if Marcus Davenport has an awesome year, he meets all those incentives. I don't think Brad Holmes would have any problem with letting him walk
right
on some 4-year, $75 million deal he gets in free agency.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
he would absolutely let him go. Like, there's no question in my mind that they, and listen, that to me, that should also draw in some free agents. If you can like say, hey, look, we're turning these guys out. Look what Jamal Williams got. We weren't going to buy that. But hey, you come in here, spend a year or two here, ball out. You'll leave with a 4-year deal.
Yeah. Hey, go pick somewhere sunny and get a bag.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, DJ Chark, another one, right?
It's Carolina, but I'm sorry.
It's sunny there sometimes. Sometimes it's really cold and their field sucks.
Sometimes it's rainy and wet from the owner's box as Dave Tepper throws a drink on you.
All right, we're off the rails here. Let's take a break. When we come back, I do want to talk a little bit more about Carlton Davis. We should probably talk a little bit about Brian Branch, and then we're going to get into Josh Reynolds, some of the new rules, and everything else from the NFL owners meetings that was this past week. We'll be right back on the PODcast.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special 3-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back here on the PODcast talking owners meetings. Josh Reynolds we'll get to in a little bit, but I do want to stick with the owners meetings because one thing that was striking to me was how the Lions talked about Carlton Davis and how much of an impact he's going to have on just their defensive approach. And I wrote about it today, Ryan, because I thought Dan Campbell said something that can't be overlooked, and it's talking about man coverage and how much they value that, and shouldn't come as much of a surprise because we've seen that that's kind of what Aaron Glenn has wanted to do, but that has also shifted a lot through the 3 years as their personnel has shifted. You know, even a guy like Cam Sutton, and we talked about it a little bit this offseason, how we weren't sure if he was going to fit necessarily with where we thought the Lions were trending, which is a more man coverage defense, it looks like. Because Cam Sutton is a little bit more of his own guy, but Dan Campbell basically erased any sort of like doubt, any sort of ambiguity. He comes out and says, man coverage is, quote, one of our core values to be a good team. He likened it to stopping the run and running the ball. Like, it's that fundamental to what they want to do. And Carlton Davis is a tremendous piece to that because he was their number one corner in Tampa. And anyone you talk to, all the people that I've talked to that cover Tampa are like, yeah, he was really good in man coverage. He's really good in press coverage. The Buccaneers started moving and doing a little bit more zone. And that's why maybe some of the stats on his, you know, PFF page or whatever don't look as good, because when he was just lined up and saying, hey, take away this side of the field, hey, take away this player, that's what he did. That's what he was really, really good at. And so I know some people were a little underwhelmed about Carlton Davis because they had talked themselves into L'Jarius Sneed or, you know, Marcus Davenport, or not Marcus Davenport. I keep doing that. The other one. Mark, what?
Amik Robertson.
No. The other Saints corner that they could have traded
for. Lattimore.
Marcus Lattimore. Yes. Not Davenport.
We got there.
Yeah. They talk to themselves into these big names that they know, and then they don't know Carlton Davis. They look at their PFF grade and blah, 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 blah. Carlton Davis is a tremendous fit for where they want to go. And I believe not only that he is going to be their number one corner, I would not be surprised to see them still sign him to an extension this offseason. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, I revealed on Pride Detroit Direct, and I'll talk a little bit about it here. You know, they obviously restructured his contract, right? He had that $14 million cap hit. They restructured it. They took, what was it, $6 million of his, or $8 million of his salary, turned it into a signing bonus. Saved $4.5 million this season. Turns out, no, they didn't. They did a lot more than that. They applied this 50% rule that they've been using a lot over these past 2 years, which essentially just takes money this year and kicks it down the road. I think he has three void years, maybe four void years. Now his cap hit this year is all the way down to like $4 million. But that leaves $10 million in the future. And to me, if you are leaving $10 million in the future and all that would hit next year if they don't re-sign him, that tells me you plan on re-signing him. You plan on keeping those prorated cap hits in those future years that are not going to be voided. And Listen, I'm sure they want to see him a little bit. They want to let him settle down. He even said, like, I kind of want to feel myself out in his introductory press conference before I jump into contract extension talks. And so I think I think people are underestimating that signing, that trade. I think he is going to be an essential part to what they want to do. And I think they view him as a long-term piece.
I do too. And I think you said it right there, Jeremy. Like, I don't think Brad Holmes is in the business of kicking the can down the road like that. Like,
they didn't have to, right? There's no reason. They're not in that bad of a cap situation this year where they need to kick, you know, 2/3 of an entire contract into next year.
Right. Like, there are no huge pressing needs, right? Like, yeah, you know, some of the other things that we heard at the owners' meetings, on Ross St. Brown is something that's kind of ongoing. And, you know, there's the Jared Goff contract extension that's kind of out there, but like, they can be patient with Penei Sewell. Like, I know a lot of us were like, all right, well, like, it's the off season. Like, let's make sure that they have time. Time, right? Like, there's no pressing need for them to, you know, make as much cap space as they have to, because they're not the New Orleans Saints, right? Like, they're not constantly, you know, juggling, you know, their salary cap. I do think that there is some underestimating with Carlton Davis. I think the one concern or the reservation that people have with him that is a legitimate one is, again, something that is pretty consistent with Brad Holmes' approach to free agency and the offseason in general, is the injuries, right? Like, the greatest ability, Jeremy, is
something
availability, right? Like, and I think that's where I can understand the concern. I think the upside, though, right, it all lies in him being more at home in this man coverage that seems so foundational to Detroit, and they just haven't had the horses to do it, right? Yeah. And that's been the biggest concern. And I think they have somebody now. Like, you look at last year's numbers from PFF when it comes to man coverage. Cam Sutton was 41st among cornerbacks in man coverage percentage at 30.2%. Carlton Davis was all the way down in the 80s at 83rd, 22% of his snaps in man coverage. I'm seeing like some trade-off in terms of, you get a guy where he's most comfortable, and a lot of things are going to benefit from that, right? Like, the player is going to benefit from it. The defense at large is going to benefit from it. it's a move that I think people are going to warm up to once they see the guy on the field.
Yeah. And listen, if you loved all the aggressiveness that the Lions showed down the stretch that caused a lot more pressures, a lot more sacks, interceptions, the Lions are going to feel a lot more comfortable doing that if they can trust their outside corners to cover on an island.
Yeah.
And they've more or less said that they trust Carlton Davis to take away an entire side of the field. Like, that is almost verbatim what Dan Campbell was saying.
And week. I mean, take it back to Carlton Davis's, you know, introductory press conference. Like, this guy has the swagger and the confidence of a number one cornerback, right?
Yep.
Like, that's one of the prereqs for filling that role. And being that player is believing that you are that guy. And I think they do have that guy, right? As long as he can stay on the field and be healthy. And if he can be on the field and he can be healthy, then again, it changes the dynamic of this defense a ton.
Yeah. And listen, Dan Campbell knows this guy, right? They played him twice last year. He specifically said they part of the game plan was to not throw at him. And he was in the NFC South while Dan Campbell was there for several years. So this isn't, you know, just throwing darts and hoping this guy turns out to be that the guy that they think he is. They've got a pretty good scouting report on this guy. And so I'm willing to trust him given their scouting reports on players so far. Speaking of good scouting reports, Brian Branch, we got to talk about him a lot with Dan Campbell, who essentially broke the news, I guess, that some people were thinking, you know, so he was basically asked straight up, listen, you guys haven't done anything in safety. Can we interpret that as Brian Branch is going to play a little bit of safety? And he, you know, Dan Campbell's like, no, you know, we're still in the safety market. We're still looking at our options there. But more or less, yes. Like, that is the trajectory that we expect Brian Branch to go on. And again, not necessarily a super big surprise. The Lions tried that out a little bit last year. They thought maybe putting that on his plate was something that he was capable in his rookie season. And then they just said, you know what? Screw it. You're playing your ass off at nickel. Stay at nickel. And we don't want to overburden you on your rookie season. There's enough flying through any rookie's heads that we don't need to throw three different positions at you. But he more or less said he is on the CJ Gardner-Johnson route where you play nickel earlier in your career, you start to ease in a little bit of safety, and then you're just going to be this versatile piece where I think you may have said it in our Slack room, Ryan, like you are just building this guy so that he is never coming off the field no matter what you're playing.
Yeah, I mean, you want Brian Branch on the field
100% of the time,
no matter what, right? And I think part of it too, right, is you get Brian Branch in a position playing nickel cornerback where he's closer to the line of scrimmage and he has the ability to flash the pass rush potential, the ability to defend the run, things that he's really good at, right? And that's something that even, you know, to take it back to Carlton Davis, Dan Campbell talked about, right? Like, he'll tackle on the perimeter, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Brian Branch is a guy who's going to tackle along the perimeter. So it makes sense to put him in that spot. Now, the other thing to consider, right, is that nickel defense is pretty much the base defense for the modern NFL. So you want to put Brian in a spot where he's going to be on the field as much as he can be. So having him in that spot, you had the luxury last season of, you know, thinking, okay, maybe Tracy can bounce back. You have Kirby, you have CJ Gardner-Johnson. You have a lot of moving pieces at safety. Brian needs to be on the field. So we're going to put him in nickel corner because discussion over, right? We don't have to worry about him being part of this rotating cast. He's a great player and we want to see him out on the field. For the people, I think, who have reservations about, well, he was so good there. Why would you want to move him, right? It's kind of like the Penei Sewell quandary, right? Where it's like, oh, he's so great at right tackle. Why would you want to move him to left tackle? Or why would you want him to move from left to right? Brian Branch played the star position at Alabama for a couple of seasons.
Yeah.
A role that he took from Minka Fitzpatrick, that Nick Saban trusted to Minka Fitzpatrick. He trusted Brian Branch to play that role. There is no reason anybody should ever question Brian Branch's instincts when it comes to playing football.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, I think. You have him playing nickel cornerback in his rookie season for all of the reasons I already listed, but also because I think that there's less to process there than it is at safety.
100%.
Right? I think that there's so 100%. Many more tasks and responsibilities that you're putting on a rookie's plate rather than see ball, get ball, and the quick intermediate stuff that a lot of slot guys are running, right?
Yep.
That makes more sense to put Branch there in that spot than it is to task him with all those responses. Like, let him grow and let him ease into things. And like you said, Jeremy, in your article, right? Like, there was that time where the Lions were like trying to put like more on his plate. And then it was like, yep, screw it. Like, just put, be comfortable at nickel cornerback. Yep. Let's not overload you in your rookie season. I'm sure without a shadow of a doubt, I'm sure that if you ask Brian Branch this off, like this training camp, you can be like, hey, how much has the game slowed down for you? And how much has that benefited you? And I'm sure he's going to be like, dude, like night and day. Right. So I think that's where you should, you know, that should ease your concerns about Brian Branch playing safety, is like from year one to year two, there's probably a lot that guy has learned, and he still has a lot to learn. But I think that the Lions could be a little bit more secure, or they could be a little bit more confident in their choosing to move him away from that spot because of his development.
Yeah. And to be clear, I don't think they are just like, okay, you're a safety now. I think it's more, okay, we can put you at safety now.
We can put that on your plate. Yeah.
Yes. You are a nickel, but you can also play a little bit of safety when we want to have either three safeties out there, or maybe we're not nickel and maybe we take Iffy off the field. You know, it's whatever they want with him. And you ask any safety in this league, Iffy and Kareev both said this, I think it's just like, when you are back there at safety, you have to know the defense front to back. You have to know why the defensive ends are doing what they're doing. You have to know why the linebackers and corners are doing what they're doing. And so when you're
in passing coverage and all that stuff,
yes. When you're in your first year of learning a defense, that is a lot to learn. There's a reason why Kirby Joseph wasn't supposed to start in his rookie season. And so now that you have a better understanding of the defense, you can do all those things. I mean, it's not going to be easy in year two, but Brian Branch, like you said, smart dude. They entrusted him with a lot early on his plate at Alabama. And so I think he's going to, Dan Campbell said, like, we're going to take it only as fast as he shows us he can handle. But my guess is it's not going to take too long to see that guy start getting serious snaps at safety.
Yeah. And last thing, I think that combined with Carlton Davis, I think you get a lot of interesting coverages, and you get a lot of interesting looks that you can throw at an offense where it's like,
you're being unpredictable.
What role is Brian playing?
Yeah.
Right? Like, is he going to move up in the box? Is he going to, you know, drop back? And with Carlton too, like you get a guy who can play more man. Like, I think you get a lot more interesting chess pieces that make things more difficult on the offense just from a schematic standpoint.
Yep. No question. All right, let's move on. Let's talk a little Josh Reynolds. Even though it seemed like the Lions were almost making a public plea to say, please come back, Josh. That doesn't happen. And in fact, in 24 hours after Brad Holmes and Dan Campbell say that they publicly want him back, he signed with the Denver Broncos on a 2-year deal. We don't know the structure of that deal. We only know that its max value is 12 million. Is that right?
Is it 14 million.
Okay. It's hard for me to have a reaction to this without knowing the actual deal, because I'm going to tell you right away, he's not getting $7 million a year. That's not what this contract is actually going to look like. He is getting a significant raise, because if you don't remember, 2 years ago, the Lions signed him to a 2-year, $6 million contract. So this is a potential doubling of that, maybe even a little bit more of that. So good for Josh Reynolds. I don't think the Lions were probably ever close to committing that much money to him. That would surprise me if they were willing to give him, I mean, maybe like a 1-year, $6 million deal where they kick some of that into 2025, but 2 years, 12 million, 14 million, whatever it turns out to be, seemed like more than the Lions were willing to pay for a guy who might have some of his playing time, probably will have some of his playing time eaten up by Jameson Williams. So I don't want to downplay Josh Reynolds' importance to the team. Like, I think he was a very important player. I think he made big plays and big moments. And we know that the coaching staff absolutely adored the guy, right? And it's not just in terms of his on-field production, in terms of catches and all that, but it's his ability to play the X and the Y. It's his ability to play the Z. It's his ability to block downfield and his work ethic and all that sort of like culture setting stuff. But again, I think this is another example of the Lions doing exactly what I wanted them to do. And maybe early on in this regime, I was afraid about, which is loving these culture guys a little bit too much that they're not willing to move on from them, or they're willing to overpay for mediocre players like this, like Jamal Williams last year. It's just, we can only afford so much of you guys. We eventually need top tier guys if we're going to take the next step beyond just a playoff team, beyond just winning the division, really pushing for a title. You need to be able to let go of guys like Josh Reynolds, even if they're doing everything right for your team.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it any better. I think now you have two off seasons in a row, right, where you have integral pieces of your offense. Jamal Williams was a huge part of the offense in 2022. Josh Reynolds was a very big piece to this offense getting off to the incredible start that it did because he was a first down machine.
Yeah.
I think if the NFC Championship game doesn't go down the way that it does, you know, because I think that there were a lot of people that were happy to see Josh Reynolds go. If that game happens differently, if there are two plays that happen differently for Josh Reynolds, there's a much different tune.
Yeah.
And I mean, we also might be talking about the Super Bowl champion Detroit Lions if those two plays don't happen as well,
okay.
Right? Like,
okay.
I know. Yeah. But I do agree that there is room for growth with both of those moves, right? Like, Jamal was great, but it goes back to Ben Johnson's comments about, like, we're leaving some meat on the bone when it comes to some runs.
Yeah.
Jamison Williams, now's your time. Yeah. Like, I think what moving on from Josh Reynolds really truly indicates is, like, a lot of trust and a lot of faith in Jamison Williams. I'm not saying that J-Mo's all of a sudden going to be a guy who's going to get 100 targets. I don't know if there's that kind of room in this offense, you know, with Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jahmyr Gibbs and Sam Laporta. You know, I mean, those three guys right there might get more targets than Jamison Williams. And that's totally well and fine. But I think that this is a huge vote of confidence in Jamison Williams as being a guy who they expect to take the next step. Again, there's a couple of other pieces, though, right, Jeremy? There's Donovan Peoples-Jones that the Lions re-signed. There's Antoine Green at the end of the roster. There's some other guys like Maurice Alexander, and there's the Tom Kennedys of the world where it's like, okay, like, I mean, there's some experience being on an NFL roster there. But there is no more safety net for Jamison Williams.
Correct. Yeah.
That's gone.
They're throwing him into the deep end at this point and saying, hey, man, year three, the injury's way in the past. Forgetting about the gambling stuff. Go be a first round pick for us. And they've been talking him up this offseason a little bit. And you're right. I think this is a little bit of a vote of confidence. Otherwise, they would maybe invest a little bit more into Josh Reynolds. But I also want to, like, let's point out the statistical, like, hole that they now have in the roster. Like, they now need, he had 608 yards and 5 touchdowns last year. Let's combine that with Jamison Williams' production, 352 for 2 touchdowns. So about just under 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns. Do you think you can get that production from Jamison Williams and Donovan Peoples-Jones? A collective 1,000 yards and 7 touchdowns.
You would hope so.
That seems extremely reasonable, right?
It does, yeah.
And so, okay, like that. And I only point this out because I feel like there's just a little bit of wide receiver hysteria happening right now. And that, like, oh, this is now a major need. I don't think it is. I'm not saying they won't draft one early. A lot of people seem to really like the wide receivers in this draft. There might be a really good one available at 29. Maybe at I keep for 61. Is that right?
Maybe.
And
who knows, listen, when it comes to Brad Holmes, there might be a lot of moving. Hey, people are putting Neighbors ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr.
Who knows?
Brad Holmes wants to move up for, hey.
It certainly seems like the way college football is headed and the way offenses are run there, that there is an easier transition from college ball to pro ball, and there is a wealth of talent almost seemingly every draft. So maybe it's good, you know, business, as Brad Holmes likes to say, to draft one every year. I'm not putting it beyond that, but to me, there is not like this gaping hole in the roster right now that the Lions have to go out and they have to draft one on day one or day two. We already know that the Lions aren't going to do that. They aren't going to approach the draft like that. But to me, I think they have enough productive players on offense where I don't think there should be a reason to expect the offense to take a significant step back just because Josh Reynolds isn't here.
No, I totally agree with that. I think I totally agree with what you're saying in the sense of it isn't, oh my gosh, we need to figure out what we're doing at wide receiver three. Like right. We need a plan, right? I do think that like you look at the contracts and you look at the landscape of the room. And I know we're all waiting on an Amon-Ra St. Brown extension, but it's like right now the guys who are signed past 2024 are Jameson Williams, Khalif Raymond, and Antoine Green. And it's right. Like, okay, well, like
you're gonna need more there.
we're gonna need more there. But I think we talked about this in one of our Q&As that we did with Eric, like on the weekend, just talking about how do you fill that Josh Reynolds role, right? Like it doesn't seem to make sense for another veteran guy to come in the sense that, well, you want Jameson Williams to get a lot of run. And what veteran guy is going to come in here of Josh Reynolds caliber who's like, well, where are my targets? Like, how am I going to get my next contract, right? So it almost seems like there is going to be a draft pick that happens because, like you said, maybe it is good business to draft a wide receiver in every draft, which is something that Brad Holmes has done. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Antoine Green. Like, I think that he's just going to draft a wide receiver at some point during the draft, whether that's at 29 or it's on day three. It doesn't matter. Like, I'm cool with whatever approach you take.
You have broken the hearts of people that want DJ Chark back.
I would love DJ Chark back too.
I would too, honestly. Like, it's kind of that perfect. It's almost like the Marvin Jones move of last year, and I know that didn't work out, but it's like bring in a veteran guy who knows the system, has a little bit of
familiarity,
comfort in Detroit, and he's going to come at a low price. It's again, it's like the reverse Benito Jones, where it's like you make sure he gets paid after leaving Detroit. He goes somewhere else, it doesn't work out, and then you bring him back and buy low again. You buy low twice on DJ Chark, although you could argue that the first time around, what was it? It was like a 1 year, $10 million deal. Maybe it's a buy high.
Yeah. And I guess also now I'm thinking about the NFC Championship game as Josh Reynolds' star faded. Who had maybe their best professional game? Jameson Williams, right?
Like, true. Two touchdowns.
Yeah.
People forget about that second touchdown, probably because it didn't, like, they were already like so disheartened. And why are we talking about that?
Yeah, maybe because Dan Campbell ran the ball a couple of plays before that.
Maybe that. All right.
Let's keep talking about that game. Let's go.
No. although I did find Dan Campbell's answer about watching that game with the team interesting, but we'll talk about that another time. Let's close out here talking about some of the new rules. Mainly, I think we want to highlight the two big ones, which we'll talk quickly here about the hip drop tackle, but I think we're both a little bit more excited about the new kickoff. So I don't know. The internet was in a tizzy over the hip drop tackle. Do you have any like hot takes about that? Do you think people are overreacting a little bit? Do you think they're trying to coach defense out of the game?
Man, it was very takey over the weekend, was it not? Like, it
sure was.
I feel like everybody had a take about this, and I don't have much of a take other than I'm not thrilled with the idea of more officiating.
Yeah.
I think that's really my only takeaway. And I do see people kind of comparing it to horse collar tackles. And I think that just different, like those are different, like two different things, right?
Sure. Yeah. Listen, I, in terms of like a new rule, I can see why it's the same. Like it's a very high injury rate play and you want it out of the league and you're taking a tool out of the defender's tool belt, which might feel unfair to them. But on the officiating part, like it's cut and dry. There's not a lot of questions with horse collars. Those are pretty easy to see. Like, the only time you ever really get it messed up is if someone's getting pulled on the hair instead.
Right. And announcers love bringing up that hair as part of the jersey.
They sure do.
You can't take that away from TV announcers. They love that.
Yeah. And I'm with you. The officiating is absolutely a major concern with this new rule. I think the league views it as we don't care. And in a good way. In it, I know we all like to say the NFL doesn't care about player health, or they're playing games on Wednesdays, and all that is true. I think when the league is given the option of player health or more money, they're always going to take more money. But that, to me, that doesn't mean that they're completely ignoring player health. I think this is a player health. And like, I think they are being legitimate when they say, listen, this play results in injury 20 to 30 times more than any other tackle. Let's get it out of the game. And if that means more mistakes from officials, so be it. We're fine with that. And the example they kept using was the full body weight thing. That's something that has changed player behavior drastically over the 3 years. But we all hate how it's being officiated, right? It's terrible. They're getting it wrong all the time. It's frustrating. It sucks. I don't think they care that much. Like, obviously, they don't want bad officiating, but if it means that players are going to be safer, I think they're willing to take that chance. And so that's kind of my take on, like, I'm with defenders that are pissed off. I understand they are making the game harder for defense, and I'm not saying they're intentionally doing that to raise scoring, but at the same press conference, they're like, scoring's down 1.5 points. We're kind of concerned about that. I'm like, what? Okay. And there was like, that's why we made the kickoff rule. We think that's going to bring off more scoring. I'm just like, okay, you're not doing yourselves any favors to defensive players who are like, stop trying to make defense illegal.
Yeah. And I'm right there with you, lock and step, in terms of why do we need to make it harder for defenders again in this league? But Right. Again, right to that point, right? Like, oh, well, maybe one of the unintended consequences is that we just get more scoring. Like,
right. Yeah. You know, that had to be like at least some other thinking.
Yeah. I have to feel like they sat down at a table and they're like, okay, scoring's down. Like, what are some things that we can just do to, you know, inflate
it's
that?
It's down 1.5 points.
No, I get it. Right. I get it.
I know you do.
Yeah.
But that's, if I was in that meeting, I'd be like, this is not a problem.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? All right, but let's talk about the new kickoff. We're not going to go through everything that's new about the kickoff. Go watch an XFL kickoff. And it's basically that with a couple more tweaks to it. My first take from it is that first of all, like, I know I'm Mr. I hate special teams. I think this is awesome. I didn't think the league was ever going to do something like this because it's a drastic change and they're a bunch of scaredy cats. But I love that the Lions fully embraced it from the get-go. Like, at the beginning of the week, Rod Wood was like, we're in favor of this. We want this to pass. When we talked to Dan Campbell minutes before it passed us, he's just like, oh yeah, we've been grinding some XFL tape. We're all about, like, we're ready. Me and Fip have got plans. And the way he put it was actually very smart. And I just like the way he said it is like, we got all these scaredy cats in the league that don't want this passed because they're scared. They don't know what's on the other side. We're embracing it. We know that with a play this new and this innovative, what's going to push teams over the top is coaching. And we believe in our coaches. I love that.
That's a great place to be. Yeah.
I love that.
I love it. I'm right there with you. I love it. To go back to talking about the hip drop tackle. This was viewed as one of the most dangerous plays in football, right? Like,
yeah.
Two things about the kickoff. One, completely ceremonial because most of them just went through the back of the end zone. And the other one was the plays that didn't go through the back of the end zone are extremely dangerous because you have these players 20, 30, 40 pounds running full speed. They're not playing on defense. They're trying to make another contract for themselves. Like, it is a very like car crash play.
When it lost James Houston for the season because of it.
Yeah. And how many players, right?
Yeah.
And I it looks funny. It looks weird. I will say, like, the thing that made me smile right when you said, like, oh, like they're trying to, you know, ruin. My dad immediately, when he was like, what's the deal with this new kickoff? They're ruining the game. What happened to the game I loved? And I showed it to him and he was like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. And I'm like, oh, right. Like, I get like your snap reaction of like, oh man, like, here's my big takeaway. I want Jameson Williams back there returning kicks.
I don't know what the strategy is with your returner. Cause I saw someone on Twitter suggest that you actually don't want the speed guy, you want the good vision guy because you don't have that much room. Before, you had all this room to accelerate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now you have, I don't know, 10, it depends where the kickoff lands, obviously, but like they're trying to land it in that zero to 20 zone, you have everyone in between the 30 and 35 yard line. So you're only going to get about 10 yards of ramp up speed. And yes, if you can get someone to go, you know, zero to 100 in that 10 yards, great. But I think there needs to be a little bit more finesse to the returner's game than maybe a full speed guy.
Yeah, but hey, I would say that Jameson Williams, A, loves special teams.
He does.
Slippery dude.
Yeah.
And then also, like, I think in, like, it's way different than punt returns, right? Like,
yeah,
you can't just throw anybody out there to return punts. Khalif Raymond is my safe spot. Like, I love Khalif Raymond returning punts. Anything beyond Khalif Raymond, I'm like, Donovan Peoples-Jones, your controller disconnected. What's going on? The kickoff thing is going to be weird though, right? Like, and I think that that's what Dan and, you know, he was speaking to is like this idea of like, it's new, it's different. Like, of course that's going to scare the shit out of everybody.
Right.
Right. Like the unknown is the scariest part of this, but in the unknown, they trust their coaching.
Yeah.
And I guess the thing I'm thinking is like Jameson Williams is probably one of your top three, maybe four important skill position players on your team. If we are making this play safer, well, is it okay to put Jameson back there? Because that was one of the great concerns about putting a guy back on kickoff is like, okay, you're running the risk of injuring this guy.
Yeah.
Now that injury concern is tilted in your favor a little bit more, do you want to put a nice skill position player back there to make that play for you?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
That's, and I mean, there's so many other questions too. Do you want linebacker types out there blocking? Do you want speed guy? You probably don't need as much speed out there.
Yeah, you want some bigger, bulkier guys.
To me, what's going to be fascinating is to see how different each team approaches it.
Colby Sorstall on kick returns.
Aleem, for the love of God, just put the ball in Aleem's hand once before I die. I'm going to hammer that forever. The guy was a running back. Let him be a running back at least once.
You know what? He was also a hell of a baseball player at NC State. I want to bring this podcast full circle.
Baseball season. Let's go. All right. Well, the ninth inning just ended. We're not headed to extra innings. Well, that'll do it for us. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. We will be back maybe with some extra stuff. Before this week is through, we'll definitely be back for a main POD cast to kind of put a button on free agency. And listen, the draft is less than a month away at this point. We got to start talking about it. So we'll start doing that here on the podcast feed. But for now, for Ryan, I'm Jeremy. Thank you all for listening. It's Chaos. Be kind.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.